Hello, I like doing this because. Hello, I like doing this. Hello, sometimes the record sticks. I like doing this because I like talking to young people very much. And sometimes I like talking to older people. But to interest young people and old people at the same time is very difficult. You either bore to tears the old people while you talk to the young ones, or you talk to the old ones and the young ones don't know what you're talking about. So it's easy to speak to the young ones, and it's relatively easy to speak to the older ones. The difficulty is speaking to everybody. And if you're clever, you can do so and bore everybody. Not only do you bore the young ones, but all the old ones, you bore the young ones and the old ones. I'm pretty good at that. But it's easy, actually. This job is very easy because with so many older ones in the audience who've read the Bible a great deal, if I get stuck for a word, they can just help me. And that's why we have a chairman here today. So if I get stuck for a word, if I just can't think of a name, I'll say, Uncle Doug, could you just tell me? It works every time. Like, for example, today I want to talk to you about David and Goliath. David had seven brothers. And if, just for example, I couldn't remember the third of his brothers, I'd say to Uncle Doug, I'm just stuck for a name. Could you just happen to pull out of your mind the name of David's third brother? And he'd say, yeah, Shammah. And I'd say, thanks ever so much. It works every time. And then I go on a bit and I say, David's elder brother was a big, tall, fine-looking chap, and his name was, could you just help me, Brother Doug? And he'd say, yeah, it's Eliab. And I say, Eliab, that's the one. That's the one I wanted, it's Eliab. See how helpful the president is? Whenever you have a chairman, he's always there to assist the speaker. And you chaps, when you grow up and you do perhaps what I'm doing and you go to other countries, you can always trust, always rely on the president. He's there to help you. He's your servant. And he does whatever you ask him. You'll see, he'll be helping me very shortly. I promise you he will. Lord, everything is subject to the will of the Lord. But I am telling you that Uncle Doug today is going to help us with our Sunday school lesson. I want to tell you about the old man who came down the road. And the people who were working in the fields at the edge of the village saw him coming, and they began to shake. They began to tremble. Because when this old man came to your village, it was for one of two reasons. Either he was here to celebrate something, and in this case there was nothing to celebrate, at least they didn't think there was, or he was coming for judgment. He was coming to tell you off for something you'd done wrong. So when these people were working in the fields, and they looked up and they saw the old man coming into the village, they said, hey, quick, get into town and tell the elders he's coming. And they ran into town and they said, the old man's coming. What? Why? Why is he coming? Said the elders of the village. Why is he coming here? So they quickly had a committee meeting. Today we call it an arranging brothers meeting. But in those days they didn't have arranging brothers. They had elders of the village. And they came and they said, why is the old man coming? Has anybody done anything stupid? We haven't been worshipping false gods, have we? Do we have any big sinners in Bethlehem? The old man came down the road. When he came into the village centre, they all said, good morning, Samuel. It's very good to... Samuel was an old man. And he came into the village and they said, good morning, Samuel. It's very good to see you. We're very pleased that you're here. It's ever so nice to see you. Will you stay to lunch? And he said, well, I'm not sure. I want to go to the house of a man whose name is Jesse. Do you have somebody here called Jesse? Whew, everybody whose name wasn't Jesse was very pleased. Wow, you know, glad he's not my house. He's come. I wonder what Jesse's done. Jesse, the old man, he was a farmer, you see. Jesse had eight sons. So he said, yeah, I just want to go to the house of Jesse, if I may. There's something I want to say to him, and there's something I want to do. You see, God had spoken to Samuel, and God had said to Samuel, I want you to go to Bethlehem, and I want you to anoint as future king one of the sons of Jesse. He didn't tell him which one. And that's why Samuel had come into the town. And that's why the people trembled, because they didn't know who he was. Samuel was a mighty, powerful man. He was called the judge.
And when Samuel said, you're in trouble, boy, you were in trouble. And when Samuel said, do this, you had better do it. And so now they're all relieved because, unless, except Jesse, I should think, Jesse was a bit worried because he didn't know why Samuel was coming to his house. Anyway, he said, welcome, Samuel, welcome, sir, you're very welcome in my house. Can I wash your feet? And doubtless he would get someone to wash the old man's feet because that was custom in those days. Today we offer people a cup of tea, which is very nice and refreshing. But in those days, they would wash the visitor's feet. And Jesse didn't like to say to Samuel, forgive me for asking, but why have you come? It would be a bit impolite, wouldn't it, in all truth, to say that. You couldn't say to the most important man in the land, great to see you, what exactly are you doing here, and how long are you going to... You couldn't say that to Samuel. So he had to wait for Samuel to tell him. And Samuel said to him, Jesse, I understand you have some sons. And he said, yes, I'd like to meet them. Very good. Eliab, could you just come here? The other boys were in another room. Eliab, could you just come here, please? This is my... Yes, Samuel. This is my eldest son. Wow. Eliab was tall, good-looking, strong, manly. Farm work, you see. Developed good muscle, good physique, tall, strong. And Samuel looked at him and he thought, oh, surely before me is the next king of Israel. You see, Saul was already the king, but God was going to phase him out. He was going to be removed from being king, and God was already electing the next one, although they still had Saul as a king. Samuel was there to anoint the next man as being the future king. Okay. I mean, whenever you read these stories, will you have a little go with your imagination? Will you let your imagination sort of not take over completely, but will you read the stories and see them happening? Okay. So in your mind, I want you to see the old man Samuel, perhaps a little bit bent, white beard, old clothes on, right down to the floor, and before him, he's standing, Eliab. The eldest boy of Jesse. And Jesse, the father, sort of saying, I wonder what he wants, you know, wringing his hands a bit and saying, I wonder why he wants to speak to Eliab. Maybe he's going to ask Eliab to be his assistant. Because Samuel didn't have an assistant. Maybe, oh, I hope he does. What a thrill. My boy, the assistant. Samuel is standing there thinking, trying to tune his deaf aid into him. I'm pretty sure this is the one, but the Lord hasn't told me it is. Samuel didn't know which one of Jesse's boys were going to be the king. He was waiting for God to tell him, and God didn't say anything. But God doesn't look on the outward appearance. He didn't want Eliab for king. And so the next one, thank you very much. The next one, please. A minute, could you come? Lovely boy, not quite as tall as Eliab, he wasn't as old. No, he's not the one either. Shammah, could we have Shammah, please? And Shammah stands there, not quite as tall as the other two, but still a powerful looking boy. And he wasn't the one either. And he goes through all seven of them. And Samuel is thinking, and they say, Is this all your son? Yeah, that's all. It's all my boy. I'm very glad that you've met my boys. And Samuel is thinking, there's been a breakdown in communication between heaven and me. Excuse me, Jesse, he says, have we seen all your boys? Are these all your sons? Yes, well, of course, I've got the little one. He didn't really count yet. he's out in the field with the sheep, counting, looking after the sheep. Now, the way I've told that story is generally the way we read it. And you imagine David coming in and being about 7 years old and quite a nipper, you know, about this big. Wrong. 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 I cannot tell you how old David was, but I'll tell you this. He was tall. He may have been slender, but he was a tall youth. And he comes in out of the field. I mean, he didn't have time to have a shower, you know. He came in, his hands were filthy, he'd got a piece of leather in his hand. What's that? Said Samuel, the thing. What are you doing with that? He said, well... He said, I look after the sheep. And sometimes mountain lions come. In fact, one day a mountain lion did come down. And I picked up a stone, and I put it in my sling, And I wound the sling up and let the stone go and stunned the lion and went and killed him with this little dagger I've got there. Well, very good. Said Samuel, I'm impressed with that. Killed a bear as well, he said. Bear came down out of the hill to take my father's sheep. I wasn't going to let them steal my father's sheep. He was a good shepherd, he said. And he said, I killed the bear as well. Same sling. You want to see me use it? No, it's all right, said Samuel. I don't need a demonstration. Just put your sling away. And while he was talking to David, the Lord spoke to him and said, anoint him, for he is to be the king of Israel. So Samuel said to David, come with me to this other little room. And he took him unto to a little room. From his coat, he took a small horn. Oh, it would only be about big. It was cut from off the head of a ram and whittled down until it was very small. And it was shaped like that, and it was hollow. And in there was a tiny spot of oil. No, not 5 gallons like some people, you know, glug, 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 all over the head of David. It wouldn't be like that. He got this little horn, anointing horn, and said to David, what I'm going to do is a prophecy of what will happen in the future. I'm going to anoint you. And as the oil ran on his head, and down he fell, trickled onto his garment, he said, in the name of God of Israel, I anoint you to be the next king. And then he went away. Samuel went away down the road, and everybody wiped the sweat from off their brow. And they said, whoa, that was a close call. Usually when Samuel comes, you're in big trouble. But he's gone away. He's had they spread tables out in the middle of Bethlehem, and they had a lovely feast. David was invited as well. And they all had a lovely feast, and then Samuel went away, end of story. But sometime later, the old enemy of Israel began to raise their voices again and say, let's have a battle against the Israelites. The old enemy of Israel, they were a tall race. They were called Philistines. They had come into the land, which we now call Israel, from one of the islands on the Mediterranean. And they'd come away from that island onto mainland Israel, and they'd taken part of the territory which really belonged to God's people. But God's people could do nothing about it. Saul was a fairly rotten sort of king, you know. He wasn't all that good. And he couldn't motivate the army, and the Philistines grew bolder and stronger, and they took more and more of the Israelite territory. And Israel was always trying to be at peace with them. Let's not fight with the Philistines, because they're bigger than us and they'll beat us. So you want a bit more territory? Okay, we'll give you a bit more territory. Until eventually the Philistines said, we want more. In fact, we're going to have a battle with you. And the Israelites trembled because they were nervous of the strength of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We have a super one-off bargain for you. Never to be repeated, this offer. We'll have one man, one volunteer. And you have one volunteer. And these two men can fight. And if our man wins, you can be our servant. We'll have all your land. And if your man wins, we'll be your servants and you can have all our land. How's that? Great idea, they said. Who's the best warrior we've got? Let's scratch our... Saul. Whoa, he's head and shoulders above everybody. You see, Saul was a tall man for an Israelite. The next Israelite came up to here. I mean, Eliab, the eldest son of Jesse, might have been a very good, strong man, but he only came up to there on Saul. So they said, this is great. Saul can be our champion. He can fight our battles, and he can fight against the volunteer from the Philistines. Good eye. I cannot tell you. You don't happen to know how tall Saul was, then? I don't either. We can't tell you how old Saul. Did I say old or tall? Let's go. Tall. That's what I meant to say. But we can't tell you. We don't know how tall Saul was, so we're going to have to guess that he was a sort of average height man. And so he would have. Israel assembled their army here, on this mountain, down the mountain here, a little brook down in the middle, and on this mountain here were the Philistines. And the Philistine says, go on then, send us your volunteer, and we'll send you ours. The problem was, when they saw the Philistine man, nobody wanted to fight him. He would have been all right if he'd been a guy about as big as me, a little fat chap. But the problem was, he wasn't a little fat chap. Uncle Doug's going to tell us how tall he was. Does anybody know? Not you oldies, not you greybeards. I know you know all these answers. They could probably tell us how big Saul was, you know, if we were to ask them. We won't give them the opportunity of showing us how much they know, Uncle Doug. We won't. We'll ask these young people, if you could tell me, please, how long is a cubit? It's a Bible measure. You read cubits often. Absolutely right. Come here, my son. You come here. Somebody knows the answer, Uncle Doug, and he's going to tell everybody how big a cubit is. Okay? Absolutely right. And if you had to put this in inches, about how long would you guess it might be? Have a guess. Just like we've rehearsed this. Thanks ever so much. Just like we rehearsed this before Sunday school. I promise you we didn't. I only asked him to come up because I saw him saying to the person next to him, there's a guy who can help me. Thanks very much. It was a fluctuating measurement, was the cubit, dependent on the length of the priest's arm. I mean, if you had a priest like Uncle Dave, it would be a bigger cubit, I suppose, than if you had a priest like me. But yes, generally speaking, a cubit was a measurement from there to about there, and it was about a foot and a foot and a half. About... Did you like that? Not been here long, I'm learning already. A foot and a half. Thank you. 18 inches. Precisely. No, not precisely. About 18 inches long. A foot and a half, yeah. Goliath, Uncle Doug's going to tell us, show us now, how tall he was. Right, Uncle Doug, your turn. If you stand up, you're going to need your chair. What I want you to do, Uncle Doug, for us, please, if you don't mind. I think you're going to have to stand on there, I'm sorry. Put the owners of this chair. Oh, it's quite hard, you'll be all right. No, don't get on yet. Not yet. You have to start at the bottom, sir. I want you to measure from... Look, you have to get down on your hands and knees to start. I want you to measure 6 cubits up that wall. Could you do that for me, please? Sort of...
From here.
From the bottom, yes, please. Oh, do it how you like. Take your time. I mean, you see, we're not timing you. Like to... 1. Could you help him count, please? Does he... 3, 4. You need the chair now, sir. How many? We're going to have to imagine this, chaps. That's 5. We don't have a rule, do we? I could, you see, I'm very bad at it. I should have brought a little. That's 5 cubits. Uncle Doug, that's 5 to... Pardon? So where your finger is 5, is it? Great. Doug, could you do me one big favour? See where your finger, that's 5 cubits. We want more than 6. We actually want 6 cubits and a span. Doug, could you open your hands for us, please, and span upwards from there? Is that possible? Great. Now, you see where Uncle Doug's finger is at the top? What I want you to imagine is another cubit on top of that. Another 18 inches on top of that. Okay, thanks ever so much, Doug. Very great. That's how tall Goliath was. That is how tall... Yes, my dear. Is that right? 10 feet 7 inches. Thanks, friend. We have a mathematic. Well, that's how tall. Thanks ever so much for you. That's how tall. Now you can just imagine somebody of average size saying, "Yes, I'll fight him." I would fight him, but I've got this raging headache today. Or do you know what I did? Forgot to sharpen my sword. I would fight you otherwise. Well, of course, headaches go away in 6 weeks. And for ages, Goliath was pacing up. Well, it wasn't Goliath, you see. It was his armor bearer. He had an armor bearer who was a giant of a man who carried his shield for him. And Goliath was asleep under the tree. While for days on end, the armor bearer of the assistant of Goliath ranted from the side of this mountain and raved at the Israelites on the other side. You chicken-hearted lot! Come on, let's have your volunteer. I curse you in the name of our gods. I'm not making it up. I'll prove this from the Bible. I curse you in the name of our God, you rotten lot. You're all cowards, every one of you. Let's have your fighter. Come on. Every day he was out there. And every day the Israelites were in their tent. Is he still there?
Yeah.
Every day he was ranting and raving at the Israelite army. And Saul was a broken man. He knew that as the tallest man, it was his responsibility to go and fight the giant. I mean, he was the nearest man he was nowhere near as big as Goliath. But it was his responsibility, and he felt it keenly. Until one day there was a bit of a commotion in the Israelite camp. And Saul said, look, we've got enough trouble with that guy over there. What's going on in the camp? Oh, there's a young chap here. What do you say your name was? David, son of Jesse. Some of his brothers are in the army, actually. Three of his older brothers, and he's brought them some bread and some cheese. And he's going round asking why people aren't fighting. Tell him, said Saul, has he seen the size of Goliath? And then Goliath would come out from under the tree and stretch himself. Whoa, what a sight. And David said, well, why didn't you go and fight him? Would you tell me what the problem is? He's only big. He's cursing you in the name of his God. What exactly is the problem? Why don't you go and fight him, anybody? David says, I'm amazed that you're putting up with this all this while. It's a disgrace that this man is cursing the God of your fathers. He's cursing Yahweh. He's cursing the God of Israel by the gods, these stupid gods of Philistia. Why doesn't somebody do something about it? Saul's offered all sorts of incentives. In fact, he said, the man who fights and beats Goliath can marry his daughter. I wouldn't mind the battle, but I don't want the prize, said David. Said, a bit slow. Never mind. We'll press on. Would you want to marry a girl called Michael? Hi, this is my bride, Michael. Say hello, Michael.
Hello. Oh.
Sorry, I really shouldn't joke about things like this, should I? I'm actually deadly serious. King Saul did offer his daughter as a prize to the man who would slay the giant. And David said, well, since there are no volunteers, I'll do it. They said. Now, David wasn't 7 years old. See? And I'll prove it. Firstly, the prize wouldn't have been attractive. Whether he wanted to marry the girl or not, that was the prize that was on offer. So he must have been older than we sometimes think. And he must have been taller than we think, because when news came to Saul that he was prepared to fight, Saul said to him, come into my tent, young man. What's your name? David. Who's your father? Jesse. Didn't know he'd been anointed to be the next king. Only David knew it. And Samuel. So David comes into the tent of the king, and the king says, what's this I hear about you willing to fight the giant? It actually gets a bit better as we go on. I mean, I'm so used to people walking out of my talks, it doesn't worry me at all. When you do get worried is when the president gets up and walks off. That's why I stand here like this most of the time. Well, Saul said to David, what's this I hear about you wanting to fight the giant? You don't take him on. He's only big. I've got a weapon that he doesn't have. It's called Jehovah. It's called the Lord God of the Israelite army, the God of hosts. He helped me. I fought a lion. He's miles quicker than this fellow. Maybe not as big, but twice as fat. I fought a bear. He was heavier than that man. Killed them both with this. With a leather sling. Right. Well, you can't fight a giant with a sling. What are you going to do? Hope to put it round his neck and strangle him? What exactly are you going to do with this piece of leather? But you better try my armor on. So he gets his armor and he puts his armor. See, Saul was a big man, but David tried his armor on. So you can't tell me David was this big. He must have been very nearly as big as Saul, not as tall maybe, but getting on, not as wide either, slender boy, but tall. And so he put Saul's armor on, buckles on the leg pieces, and buckles on the breastplate and the arm, and the helmet and the great whacking sword. He'd never held a sword in his life. He'd never had armor on before. And he goes out like a robot man. You know, okay, I'll go and fight him. Oh, clank, 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 like something from the scrapyard. So he gets to the tent doorway, and he says to Saul, "I'm sorry, sir. It's ever so kind of you to let me borrow this armor, but I've never worn it before. And it hinders me, and I'm not as fleet as foot as I might be. So would you mind if I took it off?" So Saul said, "Well, just take the sword then." "Good, mighty good, sir. But I've never fought with a sword. So I'll leave that as well, if you don't mind. I'll just take the sling." Well, you can imagine the scene. Can you see it in your mind's eye? Everything now is hid. The armor bearer goes to the tree under which Goliath is resting. And he kicks Goliath. Hey, volunteer coming. Volunteer man. Whoa, at last, said he. Right. See, big guys always busting for a fight, aren't they? Nippers aren't, but big guys. If you're 10 times bigger than the fellow you're going to fight, when shall we fight, you say? So Goliath was absolutely raring to go. He really was. Whoa, at last, he says, let's have my shield. Check the buckles on my back, will you please? Thank great. Leg armor done up, helmet on. No. Don't want my helmet. I'll carry my helmet. I'll carry my shield. Sword in place. Whew, great whacking long thing in the sheath. Leg armor on. Yeah, everything all right? Yes, I'm ready to go. Where's the man I'm fighting? What's this boy doing? That's the guy who's going to fight you. Ah. This is so one-sided, sometimes. It's like me fighting a child and the child being blindfolded. That's how one-sided Goliath thought it was. So he said to David, and David must have been able to understand his language. He said, "Come here, boy." He said, "I'm going to take your head right off with one stroke of my sword. I'm going to leave you in the field, and I'm going to let the birds eat you. And I curse you by my gods. All the gods of Philistia, I curse you by them, and you're going to pay the price for humiliating me. I wanted a man to fight me, not a child. It's a disgrace that they've sent you. Where's King Saul? Why haven't they sent a soldier instead of a boy? Well, the boy's going to pay the price." He didn't even draw his sword. David comes skipping down there. And he said, "Will you just hear me this once? You come to me cursing me in the name of the gods of Philistia. I come to you, God, whose armies you have defied. And I will take your head from off you, and you will die, and the birds of the air will eat you." And David comes down the mountainside, and he looks in the brook, a little tiny brook wending between the hills. May I boast just one little bit? I promise it's only a little boast. I've actually been there and seen it now. The little brook in the middle. End of boasting. And David comes down the hill, and he rummages around in the brook. What's he doing, says Goliath? Having a drink? It'll be the last one he'll ever have. And David takes 5 stones, puts 4 of them in his pouch, and 1 in his hand. Some people say to me that David was unfaithful, in case he missed with the first 4. May I tell you this? Goliath had 4 brothers. That's why he took 4 extra stones. And later on, David is to kill all 4 of them, or David and his men. The word of God, you see, the more you look at it, the more you find. I mean, it's only a simple story that we're telling a good God, but I like stories. And so David, with 4 stones in his pouch and 1 in his sling, approaches the giant. Now you can just imagine Goliath, can you, standing there, watching David come towards him, shield in his hand, sword not yet there, has a dagger. He thinks it's going to be a close fight. Great, long, massive arms covered by armor. And David, fleet of foot, just wearing a singlet, and some short. Leather sandal. Leiter, so confident in his movement. He's so fast, he's David on his feet. He can get, and the Goliath, the giant, is trying to get him in focus, you see. Trying to come closer, just come a bit closer. And David all the time is seeking for the man just to drop his guard a little. The shield's just a bit high at the moment. So David walks round and round, waiting for him to drop his guard, waiting for the shield to go down. And suddenly the shield is down, while Goliath peers over the top to see where the boy is. And the sling begins to wind. Faster and faster through the end. Goliath can't understand this. What is he? He's winding something up, but he didn't know there was a stone in that piece of leather. What's he doing? And he drops the shield just to see where David is, and the stone lets go. Wham! Goes like a bullet. Slam into Goliath's head. Such is the force of it. It actually breaks the bone and stays in. Such is the force, the velocity with which it was delivered, and absolutely accurate. See, David had practiced. While he was looking after his father's sheep, he'd have target practice. Put a brick over there and try and hit it. And eventually he'd get it absolutely perfect, so he could kill the lion on the bear. And now he finally took the lion. And he hit him exactly in the spot where he wanted him. Bang! Dead on. Goliath's head rocked back as though he'd been hit by a bullet. Oh! He's unconscious on his feet. And now he's swaying. And his armor is top heavy. It crashed down. Now the people on the mountain wouldn't have seen the stone. It went like a bullet. You don't see a bullet. Bang! You just see the mark on the wall. And that's what happened to Goliath. He goes down, the people see he's fallen over. He's tripped. The armor was too heavy. But he's staying down. Get up, Goliath. Can't you see them? They're all out of the tents now. Get up, man. Get up, man. As David runs over to him, skips over. He slings in his belt now. Didn't need it. He knows he's dead. He stands on Goliath. Pulls out his sword. Wham! One blow up comes his head. Goliath's dead. The Philistine. David picks up the head of the giant. You see, I think David had a sense of humour. I love him to bits. He got his head. Left it. I didn't want the body. Got his head. Hello. Yes. And he takes it, carries it along. And he comes to the city of Jebus, which is later to be called Jerusalem. And there he leaves it. I think it was a bit dark by now. He leaves it outside the city gate, looking at the city. Now you just imagine when they open the city gate next morning. Oh, time to open the city gate. Who's this? Somebody buried in the sand. Wow, somebody's buried in the sand. Get me a spade. Would you please get the spade? Oh, somebody buried in the sand without a body. I don't know how you read that. I think it's a great story. Thanks ever so much for listening. End of story. Got to draw a lesson. I couldn't get... Have I talked about all these things I was about? Stop now. Stop when you want. Great. Just that kind of president I'm... I promise you I'll stop. It would be foolish to have a story like that without a lesson. We've got to have a lesson. David fought the giant and beat him because he trusted in God. He didn't go with worldly weapons. He went with a simple sling and a stone. And tremendous trust in God. You too can win your battle. You too will have to face giants in your life. Not your life, but giants. Sometimes the giants are called pride. Sometimes giants are called envy. Sometimes giants are called covetousness. But they're big and stronger than we are. And we cannot beat them unless we trust in them. So from this morning, will you hear the lesson of David the shepherd boy and learn to put your trust in your God? Thank you, Lord. Thank you for listening.